precise voice in the process. And I want to thank you for the opportunity, I guess, to work as a volunteer on this committee over the past year. And it's kind of the first experience for me. I really haven't done this before. So some of my observations you might have heard before, you might have not. And I had also kind of written up a lot of comments for the various other staff members who assembled this report, and a lot of those have been integrated as well. And it's been also quite a steep learning curve in terms of understanding a lot of the codes and policies that are in place, as well as kind of the aspirations of council or some of the kind of declarations, and then how they're actually implemented on the ground. And the Public Works Appeal Panel process has allowed us to look at a lot of various cases. So it's kind of constantly looking at the macro and micro scale to be kind of checking the policies and trying to understand what barriers might be in place or how you can work around solutions, as well as what the multiple complexities involved as you work with various bureaus in the kind of public space and the public realm, and then also start to consider kind of alternatives or innovations or different ways of doing things. I very much have appreciated working with a lot of the staff who's been involved in this process. There's been, I feel, very frank discussions, very open, very transparent. A lot of patience, especially with some of us coming up to speed. A lot of willingness to be flexible, at least in discussing the process and in terms of the conversations and in explaining kind of potentially the implications of certain cases, whether through precedent or just in terms of what has been kind of the policy or the understood policy, if not documented, in the past. And then I will also say that I think that there's this constant balance of kind of context versus standards. So it's not an easy process. And I did not know this coming in, but in terms of working with staff and the various bureaus, there's really never going to be a fully, you're not going to ever have the predictability that's in the ideal world. I mean, we don't live in a desert. We don't live in, you're always going to have flatlands versus topography. You're going to have context versus standards. You're going to have performance approaches versus prescriptive approaches. And I think that the city, in some ways, in this process, really makes you look take a hard look at that, especially in terms of context, and that you have to always think and you have to always consider what the context is as you move forward in terms of some of these cases. And then finally, I will just say that I think it's important. Well, two more things. Sorry. I think it's very important that the city consistently looks at alternative approaches and considers flexibility and innovation as we move forward, and that there has to be different ways of having that discussion, and that we might aspire to have much more pervious pavement and so forth, but then you have to really look at how that impacts the public right-of-way versus private property versus the sidewalk versus the street and so forth, and that there has to be a different way maybe of looking at some alternative street designs, again, depending on the context as well. And that's not going to always be the easiest approach because, again, that takes consideration and thought. But I think it's going to be the best approach and the best outcome for our city in terms of the public space, because we are talking about, it's called public works, whatever, but ultimately we're talking about the public realm and those of us who use it, share it, and live in it, and what is the outcome we want and the type of environment we want to live in, not necessarily what is the policy we have to follow. I think that would be it for now.
So how would you describe... has the work of the past 2 years, in your estimation, been successful, unsuccessful?
Well, you have to, I mean, what do I compare that to?
Based on your own internal standards.
Well, I have very, very high standards. But, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. And I've really been only involved in the last year. I've been involved with a lot of the neighborhoods for like 3 or 4 years. So for me, it's been very educational and very informative. I do ask, the question becomes, as I go out into the community and talk to various coalitions and citywide about what is the work we've been doing, I'm going to be getting and anticipating questions about, well, how has the process changed? Or from the community side and the perception side. So that's something I'm still thinking through. And a lot has changed because I've never done it before, but also that's not necessarily persuasive from the public side.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Sir. Yeah.
I'll add to that. I've been working as an engineer in the metro area here for 20 years now. And so just successful or not, I'd say it's been hugely successful from what I've seen over the 20 years. And again, it's the timeline predictability that is, I think, really the big thing in my mind that stands out as a success.
And more work to do.
And more work to do.
Thank you, sir.
And I received a letter from Bonnie McKnight on behalf of the Citywide Land Use Committee saying that they feel it has been successful.
Great. Thanks. Sir.
I'm Don Geddes, principal at Walsh Construction, member of the DRAC, and the alternate from the DRAC committee on the appeals panel. I would echo that it's been successful, but I think it's a mixed bag still, to be honest with you. Very successful on new construction, bigger, straightforward projects. So, and again, it's the role that we play in how do you deal with the gray. Very easy in subdivision. And the rules we have for standards in the city, say, for instance, call out new sidewalks, that every project will have sidewalks. That's very simple to do on Broadway Clinic. You know, we know we have to put new sidewalks in. We have to match city standards. Pretty straightforward. What do you do if you're in outer northeast or outer southeast, you're on an unpaved road, you're a church that's putting in a 500-square-foot addition to their community center, and no place within 2 miles has sidewalks? Much more difficult situation. And as a part of the appeals committee, those were the tough decisions. And when we tried to make decisions, we were basically advised that we were only reviewing the decision of the bureaus. And the interesting thing is, in Andy's report, one of the goals was to resolve conflicts between the bureaus. Well, actually, the way the consolidation has worked is, or co-location, that's pretty much been taken care of. They are doing an incredible good job of that. We don't have to resolve their discrepancies because they're in agreement. If the policy says you put a new sidewalk in, you put a new sidewalk in. So as an appeals committee, we really, if we're looking at conflict, there is none. We have no way to say, to overturn that decision, they've followed the policy. The question is, should you agree with that at that point, though? And that's where the conflict has come with the public part of the appeals panel is, how do you decide that one? And we've been told we can't decide that. So that's someplace that we looked at, that panel has to be worked on over the next few years. That's where changes have to come in. I see the panel being better served. If that's all we're trying to do, my time would be better served to look at, is there an issue there that needs to be looked at policy-wide? Because your bureaus are making the right decisions.
Yeah, and having promulgated that policy, I look forward to talking to you about it over the next year and a half. It is a very contentious issue.
Yes.
There are lots of competing citizen, neighborhood, business district views on this matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, nope. So it's not limited to discussion within, and there's disagreement among neighborhoods. There's disagreement among businesses. So it is something we'll look at now that we've got this sort of stability of a certain amount of reform and reinforce the culture of continuous improvement, and we've got bureaus working together, which was our task number one. I look forward to being able to talk about some of these policy choices.
Yeah, that's really what we see as the long-term thing to look at, because the new stuff, South Waterfront's pretty easy.
Yeah.
It's all new. A subdivision, as I said, pretty easy. It's all new. Miracles Club, when we did it, you know, we're on MLK, pretty easy, put it in. But it's in the neighborhoods that you will have issues.
But I will make one other comment. Oh, sorry.
Well, I just wanted to suggest that in the annual report, you forward those policy questions to council so that we can then deal with them. That with the hearings officer's report, annual report, that includes things that have come up as, you're right, you have to follow the bureaus and the appeals committee has to follow the policy. But I want to hear from the appeals committee, what are those policy conflicts that then council needs to figure out how to resolve them?
Yeah.
Well, this one is at an administrative level. So we got folks out there, my staff will tell you, who do not want us to do anything other than sidewalks. And we got folks out there that believe that, you know, 20 feet of sidewalks on an otherwise street without it does not make sense. And the Bureau is we're in the process right now of going through a sort of, again, we did this 6.5 years ago and then did Safe, Sound, and Green. So we're working on basic safety of the busiest streets, but now we've got a whole bunch of streets, neighborhood streets that we got to look at and infill, and what do you do with requirements on sidewalks. And some parts of town don't want sidewalks. You know, like there are plenty of streets in Southwest that don't have sidewalks, would not want to have to be forced to have infill put in sidewalks. So over the next year and a half, before I'm out of this job, we're going to have a rich community and council discussion about that, and hopefully get down to the level of actual streets and conversations with people along streets and what do they want in the long term. Did you want to add something? You're like chomping at the bit.
I just wanted to follow up. Regardless of where you land on certain policies in terms of your neighbor, whether you do or don't want, I think also the value of the panel in this process has been the documentation. So
good point.
People understand why decisions are being made. And so there's a conceptual kind of, there's some questions I've had from certain neighborhood groups is saying they just don't know why certain decisions were made. And so right. I think through this process where there's letters written saying this is what the applicant's being required to do and this is why has been very valuable. And as well as starting to identify some of these other policy issues that keep coming up or some of these questions that keep coming up as you can start to track that. I mean, I could come up with 10 but I won't do it right now.
Well, and the notion that, again, now that we have a certain amount of rigor and stability and we have a new sort of the co-location work, being able to and we still have a lot of work to do on the internal systems, don't get me wrong, but with a certain amount of that reform underway or momentum underway, we have hopefully built for ourselves the opportunity to, you know, have those discussions, and it's part, you know, it's the moving forward of the Portland plan as well, you know, for every part of town, given the limited amount of infrastructure, either that's coming from taxes or from developer fees or whatever, what does every part of town want to do with that as it relates to public works? You know, what's the highest and best use? So I look forward to that. And we wouldn't get to this point of being able to have that discussion without your work. So thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify on this matter? All right. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Sue, would you please call the vote on the motion?
Saltzman.
Well, thank you for this presentation. I want to thank Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard for their pioneering work in the whole concept of co-location and making our public works permitting process better. And we will continue to strive to make it better, we being not only Bureau of Development Services, but all the infrastructure bureaus who you heard from today. And I do think that I'll follow up with Paul about this idea that, you know, who's going to be responsible for making sort of the next year or the mid-year presentation? Maybe we should rotate it amongst infrastructure bureaus, but I want to make sure there is some sort of a line of accountability. That's there that somebody's got to carry forward the effort to update us and, you know, do that. So I'll follow up with Paul.
But Commissioner Saltzman, thank you and your office for taking the lead on that.
That's right. BES is well equipped. Yeah. Thank you for that.
So I just wanted to also thank again Paul, Andy Peterson, Kim Talent, Matt Grum of my office for all his hard work on this as well. Please vote aye.
Leonard.
Well, Commissioner Saltzman's just identified an issue that I do have a concern with, and I do think that from my background and my experience, you need to have a person or an entity that is ultimately responsible. And so I see that as a weak link in the report today. So I think, Paul, you shouldn't be shy in the next year if you think for any reason the dilution of accountability is such that this starts to affect the goals of the whole project in the first place. So, setting that aside, this was by far one of the most challenging projects I had been assigned to work on. And Mayor Adams was very clear when he took office, and I met with him initially, that this was an effort that he wanted not just me to work on, but to successfully work on. And it was quite a challenge. David Schaff, I think, did us all a favor by articulating his concern, and it should not go without note that While I was assigned the Bureau of Development Services, I was also assigned the Water Bureau at the same time. And that notwithstanding, there was a very contentious debate in the Water Bureau that I'm sure just reflects exactly what was happening in the other bureaus, whether we should have any co-location at all, notwithstanding the impact it had on the using public. As I recall, some people had to go to as many as 7 places to get a permit, which is something that the city had assumed was standard operating procedure, but anybody who came into the city to do a project scratched their head and was very frustrated by that. So to go from that model to a model wherein people go to one location to get all of the permits that they need is an understatement, a huge challenge in a bureaucracy as large as Portland is. So for the review time to go from 20 weeks to 11 weeks is phenomenal. That's really outstanding. And as we heard, for people, and some people weighed in on this debate early on. When I say early on, back in 2002 and 3 and 4 and 5, as we were beginning to change how permitting occurred in the city, they viewed this debate between rich developers and neighborhoods, not understanding that there were many people who came in to get a permit to add an addition to their house or to build their own house in the city who walked away frustrated. I will tell you that we saw another great example of what I think the nuances are of what need to be focused on in improving the permit process and what needs probably not to be changed, and that's this discussion we had on sidewalks. I don't see that as a gray area. I mean, I hear often from communities outside of the core traditional boundaries of Portland that were originally unincorporated parts of Portland that don't have sidewalks. When are you going to get us sidewalks? And to somehow make a decision as a council that we won't at least incrementally add sidewalks as we do remodels that are a certain level or new construction just because other houses on that street don't have sidewalks, I think would be a step backwards. But having said that, you correctly pointed out that that wasn't a problem amongst the bureaucracy, but rather a larger policy question that the council may want to debate. I feel pretty strongly about that, though. So
does the rest of the city.
I feel pretty strongly that they should be built.
Yes.
And as people do development, they should build the sidewalks, as that's how Portland traditionally ended up with sidewalks. And to back away from that would be a mistake, in my view. But I appreciate that you acknowledge the bureaucracy was doing what the rules said, and they are. But it would be also a mistake not to point out the great leadership of Paul Scarlett, who I hugely miss working with on a day-to-day basis. He's just a great guy. But his ability to delegate important tasks such as this to people that are very well qualified. Andy Peterson is who I'm thinking of. He worked evenings and weekends. Mm-hmm. I mean, this change is just underestimated in the community, how it happened and the commitment that it took by people, starting with the mayor to say, I want this done, with Paul figuring out how to get it done, and then with Andy actually doing it. And Andy and all the people you worked with in the different bureaus, I just can't say how much I respect the work that you all did and the commitment you made to make Portland a better place for everybody. Aye.
Fritz. Thank you, Director Scarlett, for this report. And I need to state that as long as I am on the council, every July and August, I will be looking for this report, this annual report. So, and I'm confident that the staff and the infrastructure bureaus will work together to provide that to council, as you have done with this particular report. Co-location has increased efficiency, and it has helped the bureaus work together. And as I reflect on my first 2.5 years in office, we did a lot of good work that first 6 months, and this is one of those achievements that doesn't grab headlines. Bureaus work together, but it's absolutely what needed to happen, and the mechanism of doing so has worked out very, very well. And I think that the transition from the Bureau of Development Services being the lead to the team responsibility and accountability shows that this look that you believe this co-location has worked so well that you can get the job done, and I appreciate that. Simone brought up the issue of the public realm, and this is a reminder that the customers of the Bureau of Development Services and indeed the Public Works Permitting is not just the applicant. It's the public at large, the citizens, the neighbors, and I very much appreciate how all of the staff recognize that the customers include the public and the greater benefit of the public right-of-way. That's what we're talking about here. I particularly appreciate Christine Leone. The whole staff has worked together, but I have to single out Christine because she was very responsive to a concern that Annette Madsen from the David Douglas School Board and resident of East Portland brought up on how do you get sidewalks on 122nd. Mm-hmm. And we might disagree on whether you need sidewalks on the LID that the gentleman spoke about this morning on an alley in inner southeast Portland with nearby sidewalks. There should be no disagreement that we need sidewalks on 122nd, and we need sidewalks on every major arterial, every major transit street, and every designated city walkway. And I'm hoping that the Bureau of Transportation, the Office of Management and Finance, will let us know what would that cost. And yes, we need to get it incrementally through development wherever possible. And there may be some places where that development is not going to happen in my lifetime. I would like to think that we would have sidewalks on dangerous streets with busy traffic and people trying to catch the bus at some stage in the future. I think we need a plan for that. I think we need to know the total amount that would cost. And then so that we could tell citizens it's going to take 20 years or it's going to take 50 years or whatever it is to know how that is going to happen. I was at multiple neighborhood night out parties last night, and one of them was in Southwest Portland, as Commissioner Leonard mentioned, an annexed area that didn't have city services when it was brought in from the county. And a woman there said, I don't believe we'll ever have a sidewalk on Southwest Huber, which connects to this Barber Transit Center, where there's a person with a wheelchair who is using the street because there's no shoulder, there's no sidewalk, and they have to be in the travel lane in order to be able to get to the transit center. That's not a 21st century city, and we need to have a plan for that. So the fact that the bureaus are working together on the public works permitting, that it's become more efficient, that it's working for the applicants as well as for the citizens, I think is a great achievement. And I very much appreciate all of the work that all of the staff have done on this. And indeed, the cooperation between the council members assigned to the bureaus and the bureau directors. It's an example of something that we've done well. Thank you. Aye.
Fish.
Most everything's been said, so I'll just begin by thanking the mayor and Commissioner Leonard for doing the heavy lifting on the council, and to Paul Scarlett and his team for all the work that you did. This was incredibly complicated. I think back 2.5 years ago when I believe, Mayor Adams, you announced 5 reform efforts. And they were all complicated. I had the pleasure of being most involved in 2 of them. One was the creation of a new Portland Housing Bureau and bringing the talent and treasure of 2 entities together. That, too, was mind-numbingly difficult. And I think the forecast was that we'd unleash the best of both entities if we consolidated housing. And I think the verdict is in, and I think it's been an enormous success. PDC focusing on economic development and jobs, and the new Portland Housing Bureau focusing on housing within a structure of a strategic plan. This was also enormously complicated, and I remember the debate at council, and it was pretty lively, mm-hmm. and there were very strong views. And I thought it was actually the best of the council decision-making because we kind of came to a consensus that was probably different than some people forecast, and then unanimously the council asked you to go forward with this. And I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Hannah Kuhn, who was at the table working with all these talented people, coming up with ultimately the ordinance that we adopted. I'm delighted to hear that this has been a success because it was all of our intent for this to be successful, just as I'm really proud that the new Portland Housing Bureau has delivered on its promise. And Mayor Adams, none of this would have happened if you had not established 5 priorities. 5 was probably an ambitious number, but when you set the marker then it gave the political impetus for all of these things to happen. So thank you for that and your leadership. And to my colleagues and to staff who've brought us to this day, thank you for your hard work and dedication. Aye.
Adams.
Commissioner Saltzman and your great office team, thank you for showing in the report to council your enthusiasm, obvious enthusiasm for the work ahead and the real opportunity with the investments of bringing the work of these bureaus into the sort of the modern age of technology and all the service improvements that will come with that. And the accountability that will come with that, and the access and the tools and guidance for the city to come with that, it shows, and I appreciate that. The kind words, and I want to thank Christine and Director Miller and their teams and the Bureau of Transportation and everyone else, my friend Lana and the great folks at BDS, Director Scarlett, for your work. But I want to leave the last to Commissioner Leonard, who on occasion I would join him at internal meetings when necessary to work on this. But he underplays the difficulty of the work of doing this because it is sort of back office, so to speak, operations because there's so much good intention in individual silos, but not necessarily sort of that team approach to the effort because of the massive and nearly insufferable process storefront to the public. You know, the public has, you know, on one hand, the Bureau of Development Services has made huge improvements over the last, 6 years, but then on the other hand, you know, how can you say that when, you know, my permit is stuck? And that's because there are, 8, 9, depending on the permit, these other, reviews that have to happen. So my thanks to you, Commissioner Leonard. This was incredibly difficult. And the city is better for it. Time is money. And so When I saw really good projects that we all think are green and sustainable and, well designed and supported by the neighborhood and supported by local businesses, and they still get stuck in the process unnecessarily, that was really, I think, a call to action. And after we had done how many hundreds of changes to the code over the past 6 years in improving the code, and that work will continue, and still have troubles in the process. This was thankless work, but very important work. What I like about it most, it's been done in a way where the work for ever improvement will continue. A 55% increase in turnaround times. That's pretty amazing in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Aye. Mm-hmm. We will now hear. Thanks. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 820?
821.
Sorry. No, 820. 821. Sorry, 821.
821. Accept the Minority Women and Emerging Small Business Program Plan of SSC Construction, Inc. for the Powell Butte Reservoir number 2 Phase 2 project as part of the Phase 1 limited notice to proceed.
Hi, what are we looking at?
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. In December, an ordinance was passed that authorized Procurement Services and the Water Bureau to use a modified good faith efforts process in which the awarded contractor would be required to create a Minority Women and Emerging Small Business Program Plan. This is similar to what we use when the city uses a CMGC or a Construction Manager General Contractor solicitation process. In May, City Council authorized the award of a contract to SSC Construction and ask that we return back to council to report on the MWSB plan that will be used on this project. You have before you a procurement report recommending authorization of SSC's plan. In this plan, SSC and its first-tier subcontractors will work together to achieve the aspirational goal of 35% MWSB participation on this project. SSC and their first-tier subcontractors plan to sub out $34 million $34,979,688. Of this subcontract amount, $12.2 million is targeted to MWSB subcontractors. I'll turn this back over to council if there's any questions, and a representative from SSC Construction is here if you have questions of them.
Discussion on council? Is anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
I'll accept a motion to accept the procurement report.
Move.
Been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Sue, would you please call the vote on the motion to accept the procurement report?
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams. Sorry about that.
It's all right. Aye. 821 is approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance item number 822?
Authorize revenue bonds to replenish the Portland Parks and Recreation System Development Charge Fund.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Mayor Adams and colleagues, this is related to the action we took last week when we authorized alternative financing for the Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation proposal that the council unanimously adopted. And this is the next piece in implementing what the council authorized. And I guess we have a very brief presentation.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Jonas Beery, the city's debt manager. As Commissioner Fish said, the non-emergency ordinance before you authorizes issuance of revenue bonds that will replenish approximately $1 million into the park's SDC fund. This is related to actions that were taken on July 27th related to the Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation. As you'll recall, the park's SDC fund has loaned approximately $1 million to ORF for construction of the facility that will house city-owned locomotives. The borrowing before you today replenishes that fund balance and allows parks to continue with their fiscal 2011-12 programmed capital improvements. The proposed bonds will be secured by a pledge of parks SDC revenues, and there will be no legal claim on the general fund or any other city revenues. The bonds mature over no more than 5 years, with maximum annual debt service estimated at $350,000. One note is the ordinance authorizes a borrowing amount of up to $1.08 million, sized to accommodate issuance costs and a debt service reserve. It does appear that a reserve will not be required, so we don't expect the borrowing to exceed $1 million, but wanted to leave that authorization in there just in case things change. Annual parks SDCs are expected to significantly exceed annual bond payment amounts. For example, fiscal 2011 parks SDCs were around $3.9 million compared to a maximum annual debt service amount of $350,000. That's coverage of about 10 times. Additionally, and importantly, revenues that the city receives from repayment of the existing ORF loan will match or exceed debt service payments on this loan. So what that means is if the ORF, assuming ORF loan payments continue to be paid as dictated and scheduled and expected under the existing loan agreement, those revenues will fully cover the costs of these bonds. If for any reason those revenues are fall short, Parks SDCs will be legally obligated to fill that shortfall. Pending a second reading next week and council approval, and upon expiration of the 30-day remonstrance period, we expect to execute a financing agreement the week of September 12th. Be happy to answer questions. We have Parks staff here available if there's questions.
Any discussion from council? Does anyone wish to testify non-emergency ordinance item number 822? All right. Moves to second reading next week. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance and amendment of an earlier ordinance item number 823?
Revise ordinance to update engineer estimate and construct the Carolina Pump Main Extension.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Director
Schaff.
Hi, I'm David Schaff, the director of the Portland Water Bureau. I know you're running late today, so I'm going to keep my remarks as short as I can. This is a project that you authorized, a larger project, back in January of 2010. We put it on hold back in October because of budget constraints. We have some savings in our West Side Header project that we have achieved, and we would like to move forward on part of or a downscoped portion of our original Carolina Mains project. I have a map if you'd like me to go through it, but in essence, we're going to be upsizing the Fulton Pump Main for a smaller section. We're going to be repairing a leak on that main as well. as well, and doing some seismic upgrades at the Burlingame tanks. Then, as we get funding, we will do the rest of the project, which is to connect the Fulton with the Carolina pump main so that we provide redundancy in what's called the Burlingame service area. That's the grand scheme. This is a small portion of that.
Discussion from Council with Director Schaff. Does anyone wish to testify on non-emergency ordinance item number 823? All right, moves to a second reading next week. Can you please read the title for an emergency ordinance item number 824?
Authorized subrecipient contracts totaling $12,568,147 to provide services to further the goals of the Portland Housing Bureau through its strategic plan and the 10-year plan to end homelessness and to provide for payment.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. And given the time, we'll try to expedite this presentation. I'm pleased to welcome to the dais Portland Housing Bureau Director Margaret Van Vliet and Sally Erickson, who's the manager of our Ending Homelessness Initiative. And later, we will hear briefly from Michael Kaplan of the Cascades AIDS Project, Ray Espana from NEA Family Center, Mark Jolin, Executive Director of JOIN, and Shannon Singleton, the executive director of the Safe Women's Shelter. Last month, we released the 2011 count of homelessness that showed that despite the prolonged recession and double-digit unemployment, the number of people experiencing homelessness in Multnomah County increased only slightly between 2009 and 2011, from approximately 2,500 people that are classified as either street homeless or in our shelters in 2009 to about 2,700 people this year, which I think is, in an interesting way, is a pretty strong validation of the success of our programs, particularly because our peer cities are seeing enormous spikes in street homelessness. And I'm reminded that in Los Angeles, a federal judge not long ago ruled that there were 50,000 unsheltered people just in that city. So
50,000.
So we're making progress, even though we're in the middle, we're going into a headwind. The public investments we've made in our 10-year plan and the effective work of our community partners demonstrates that we are putting money in the right places to end homelessness, enabling us to hold the line against even greater increases in homelessness. Yet our work is not done. We must continue to maintain and increase the current level of funding for these programs and finish the job. I want to thank Mayor Adams and my colleagues for their stalwart support of this effort and for the increased funding for PHB's budget in the last two budget cycles, despite cuts that were taken elsewhere. One of our best success stories, Mayor Adams, in our community is our rent assistance program. Over the past several years, the city and its jurisdictional partners have worked together to secure resources and coordinate the rent assistance funds to the creation of what we call the Short-Term Rent Assistance Program, or STRAW. Home Forward, our local housing authority partner, manages the program. Last year, STRAW funds prevented homelessness for over 1,000 households. They were at risk of homelessness, but because of the short-term rent assistance, were able to maintain their housing, and they assisted over 366 households to secure permanent homes. In this fiscal year, the Bureau will invest $1.8 million in the STRAW program, in part because Mayor Adams budgeted initially $1.3 million and then in his final proposed budget increased that by $500,000 to fully fund the STRAW program, which is one of the great success stories in our toolkit. And with those monies, we will target funds for families with children and communities of color through our Schools and Housing Stabilization Fund, and a special allocation to culturally specific agencies. This investment significantly leverages other funding sources and is one of our community's most effective strategies and resources in curbing the tide of homelessness despite this economic calamity. And in 2010, I was also proud to be part of a council that designated a $1 million special appropriation designated by Mayor Adams to address homelessness in downtown Portland. Recognizing that we have a strong network of existing services and housing in our community, these funds were directed not to create new programs and new ongoing costs, but to free up bottlenecks in our system that allows us to use our existing resources more efficiently. The outcomes of that investment are astonishing. In the first 6 months, 150 households moved from the streets into homes. 723 youth received outreach services, and 67 people obtained employment or benefit support. We've demonstrated that given the resources, we have the tools to house anyone who is homeless, families, young adults, individuals with mental illness or other disabilities, and people who are unemployed. The programs the Portland Housing Bureau will fund in FY11-12, the next fiscal year, incorporate the successful elements from this initiative to enhance the capacity of our nonprofit and community partners and our overall system of services. And I'll let our team make a brief presentation, and then we'll take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. I'm glad to be here today to discuss these critical contracts and the important work that they represent in our community. With me again is Sally Erickson, who runs our Ending Homelessness programs. Before you hear a few words from our partners, I just want to add a little bit of context set forth by Commissioner Fish. First, in establishing the contract amounts and the deliverables that they represent, I want to affirm for you that they are consistent with the strategic direction set forth in our three-year plan and with the adopted budget principles for the current year. Second, I want to stress that we will pay for these services using a combination of funding sources. The largest source by far is, of course, City General Fund, but you should know that we also invest various federal sources into this work, and that detail can be found on page 2 of the fiscal impact statement. With the overall reduction in funding for this suite of programs, including from federal sources, we've had to trim and scale back. The STRAW programs we've talked about have taken the biggest reduction, but we are hopeful that we've retained a balanced approach that gets us the best impact possible. Third, I want to remind you that we don't do this work alone. You'll hear from our nonprofit partners. But equally critical is our partnership with other units of local government, Multnomah County and Home Forward. We continue the hard work of aligning our programming, our expected outcomes, and our funding streams to deliver on the goals of the 10-year plan. And finally, I want to assure you to the best of our ability, these contracts will aid a balance of beneficiaries when taken together with the investments of our other partners. Homeless women, homeless men, youth, victims of domestic violence, veterans, and, of course, families. We absolutely keep an eye on the trends in homelessness, and I encourage you to read the recently released report on the point-in-time count that Commissioner Fish mentioned. As an overall system, we cannot yet meet all the needs that exist, but our partners continue to refine their approaches to impact permanently as many lives as possible based on what's working and what's not in real time. I will stop there and turn the podium over to our partners, and then Sally and I can return for questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So if you could all come forward, please.
We have four mics today.
Welcome, and thanks for your patience. Michael Kaplan, why don't you kick us off, and if you could try to keep it to about 2 minutes.
Got it. Good afternoon, and thank you, Mayor Adams and the commissioners, for taking this time. My name is Michael Kaplan. I'm executive director of Cascade AIDS Project. Cascade AIDS Project is the oldest and largest AIDS service organization in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Of the funds that are being proposed here, $931,000 would come to Cascade AIDS Project. That in its entirety is funded through a HUD program, which is Housing Opportunity for People with AIDS, that comes to the city. To give you some indication of how we use that, poverty is probably the greatest indicator outside of risk behavior in terms of people living with HIV. And you will find a much higher prevalence of HIV among the homeless population. There are two reasons we want to address that. One is you can't do treatment unless you're in stable housing. And without treatment, you can't effectively reduce viral load and stop new infections. And secondly, you simply don't want people like myself living with HIV who are forced to, whether it's barter sex for safe living situations or surfing couches, you want that risk contained in terms of having people in stable housing. With the funds that comes to Cascade AIDS Project, last year we supported housing for 154 households. 34% of that were women in terms of the people served. There were 276 clients within those households, and 50% were from communities of color. In addition, I'm proud and happy that we are partnering also with the Bureau on new opportunities to bring in more federal funds. Currently in Oregon, we have 3 SPINS contracts that come to the states, Special Projects of National Significance. 2 of those we do in partnership with DHS. 1 is done with our house. We've now applied and hope to hear in the next few months with the city for one that would bring another $1.3 million in stable housing for people living with HIV. The last piece I'll say that the funds that we received do is we added this last year an employment program with the idea that there are many people who have lost opportunity for stable work because of health but are ready to get back in there. And we want to get them off relying on housing programs. And so part of the funding that comes to Cascade AIDS Project employs a full-time employment counselor who has been exceeding all targets in helping people line up new employment.
That's great.
Thanks Thank very you. Much. Ray Espana is known to my colleagues, but he also wears many hats, and he serves on the Portland Housing Bureau's Advisory Commission. Ray, thanks for joining us.
Commissioner, thank you. Mayor Adams, Commissioners, it's both an honor and pleasure and a blessing to be with you today. And I'll just share a few comments relative to the action here. And I think that I want to begin by saying that we're in deep appreciation for the city's effort to look at critically the changing complexion of homelessness, who we're seeing. I think the demographics are beginning to change. We're seeing at NAIA Family Center just increasing numbers of folks presenting themselves for homelessness, many with children. So we're seeing a few things. Our agency has become a fourth partner in the homeless youth system. And with that respect, we're seeing homelessness represent itself outside of downtown. So I think changing numbers, the distribution, we see change of foot in some respects. Of the numbers of young persons that we've served, 20% were parenting teens homeless. And so there's, you know, increasing concern we have in say, the communities of color perspective. So we're seeing increasing numbers, a distribution. The need, I won't touch the need. We all know that the need is tremendous. At NAIA, we promote a continuum of support, so we not only deal as effectively as we can in terms of the emergency situations, emergency housing, trying to do the prevention, all the way to coaching and counseling and home ownership. So we believe in that kind of continuum of support. And I'll just close by saying that it has been an honor to continue the partnership with the city, representing many of you, of the views of the Coalition of Color. Their active engagement with city staff has been well received. We continue to look at the efficacy of strategies and how they translate out, and I commend you all for your stalwart championing of equity and concern in that respect. And so we'll continue that kind of vigilance as we look at how dollars are used and the return on the investment and creating more opportunities. So with that, I'll close. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Shannon, welcome.
Thank you. I'm Shannon Singleton with the Safe Shelter, and I want to thank the city and Portland Housing Bureau for continuing to fund our SAFES program. We're an agency that is one of the few that provides gender-responsive services to women experiencing homelessness in Portland, and we are able to provide services to address the trauma histories, the addictions, mental illnesses, as well as housing needs of the women that we serve. 72% of the women that we serve at SAFES identify at intake as having a recent violent assault. I think it's really important for us to continue having these gender-specific services for women to access. And we've been able to leverage resources from the City of Portland to form partnerships with other community-based agencies to really provide some holistic services to the women that we serve. And we've also been able to leverage those funds to secure a recent $500,000 HUD grant to house 30 households in some permanent supported housing with some mental health support services. So we really appreciate having the funding and continuing the funding and hope that SAFES will be able to stay a primary program in our community.
Thanks very much. Mark Jolin is Executive Director of JOIN, also a member of our Portland Housing Bureau Advisory Commission. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. My name is Mark Jolin. I'm the Executive Director of JOIN. I also have the privilege of being the co-chair of the Coordinating Committee to End Homelessness with Shannon. And I want to express my appreciation, our collective appreciation, for the investment that this ordinance represents in all the work that people out there are doing to try to get out of homelessness back into permanent housing. We came into year six of the 10-year plan with a lot of successes. We've got thousands of people who are in housing today, many with serious disabilities who had spent years living on the streets. We have a system-wide set of shared outcomes that focus on what's really important, which is, are people actually getting off the street into their own homes, and are they staying there? We've created a supply of permanent supportive housing. It's obviously not enough yet, and there's still a lot of work to be done there. But that's housing that is there for folks who need more intensive support. And at the same time, as Commissioner Fish said, we've created the short-term rent assistance pool so that people who need a little financial assistance and a little bit of advocacy can get back into permanent housing and back to self-sufficiency as quickly as possible. And then we've started to build some very innovative income acquisition programs in our community, both around helping people find employment and helping people get onto long-term benefits. But year six was also obviously a challenge for us, continues to be a challenge in terms of the recession and cuts in other areas of the system. And so the need to find revenue, new revenue, and also to do more with the resources we have has been imperative. And in that vein, I think the mayor's special appropriation that you all approved, $1 million, was a really good learning experience for all of us, because as we've talked about before, we set out there to test whether by attaching flexible rent assistance dollars and income acquisition support to our system across the board, from street outreach to shelter to transitional housing to deeply subsidized permanent housing, we could quickly and cost-effectively move people out of higher cost resources in the system. Right now, as Commissioner Fish said, more than 150 households have moved off the street into permanent housing with this program. Another 34 households have avoided eviction. That's beyond what any of us thought we would be able to do. And those are folks coming out of every sector of our continuum. More than half of those individuals are families, and more than half of those folks are people of color, in part because the initiative also focused on helping build capacity within culturally specific organizations to provide ending homelessness services. And I'm just going to give you one story actually from Shannon's shelter. A woman, we'll call her Sonia, who was staying at the shelter. Because of PHPI, we were able to refer her to Central City Concerns Employment Program. They were able to help her get a job as a stylist at one of the local salons. And then SAFES was able to use the rent assistance, flexible rent assistance money, to help her into a shared housing arrangement where she is now able to pay her own rent. So she's one of 37 women that moved just out of the SAFE shelter over the course of this year with that PHPI money, making those shelter beds available for other folks in the system. For our part at JOIN, I obviously want to thank you for the continued investment that you're making. You'll see we would have a contract here for about $1.3 million in general fund. Last year, that investment allowed us to put 6 outreach workers out on the street full-time to look for folks who are homeless, but also to take referrals from the police, from parks, from school counselors, and from other businesses and neighbors who are engaging folks on the street and are trying to get some help for those folks. We were able to help over 500 men, women, and children move inside. Half the folks we were able to house are women. 40% were people of color. That's work that we just couldn't do on anything like this scale without the investment that you're making. So on behalf of JOIN and on behalf of all of us who are doing this work, thank you for your continued support.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
That concludes our presentation, unless council has questions.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
I would.
It's an emergency ordinance.
Great. So, is there any wishes to testify on emergency ordinance 824? Sue, would you please call the vote on 824?
Saltzman.
Well, good work, Commissioner Fish, and thank you for the presentation.
Hi.
Leonard.
And thank you, Commissioner Fish, for continuing to help the most disadvantaged people in our community. You've done really great work. Hi.
Prince.
I, too, thank Commissioner Fish and Director Van Vliet and your entire team for the good work on this, and I particularly appreciate our community partners who truly are partners and are working with communities within the community, and that's important. And I also thank Commissioner Fish for giving me more information on the services available to single women, and look forward to continuing to discuss that in the future. Aye.
Fish.
Well, thank you for the presentation, and I just want to observe briefly that the reason this movement, this housing movement, has had success in the last 3 years, despite the worst economic downturn in my lifetime, has its roots in what I would call almost the Portland way, which is the way government, nonprofits, the business community, and the faith community come together to solve problems. But this particular problem can't be solved without resources. So I want to begin by thanking my colleagues, because without their leadership and without the mayor prioritizing this funding, we would be in a completely different position. And if you doubt that, Director Van Vliet observed that in page 2 of the financial impact statement, it shows you where the sources of funding are. And what my colleagues may find surprising is that 75% of the money that we use to address this problem, which after all is a national problem that has Portland implications, 75 cents on the dollar we pick up locally. And that should be for the broader public a cause for concern, because homelessness did not originate in Portland. The feeders that are aggravating homelessness, the national unemployment rate, the breakdown in health care, the lack of adequate funding for mental health services, veterans coming back from war without proper services, and on, these are national problems. But increasingly, we're being asked to solve and address these problems locally. And I would be remiss if I didn't observe that in the most recent debt deal that Congress adopted, one of the primary tools of getting to those reductions is a further pushing of these obligations to the states, mm-hmm. and a brutal cut at the federal level of the funds that we rely on to address what is essentially a national problem. So our challenge will only get more complicated. But our success is the partnerships in the community, strong leadership on the council, and a wonderful team at the Portland Housing Bureau. And so I thank everybody for your work. I wish Portland was not asked to address this national problem. I wish we understood that homelessness was all everyone's concern and we had adequate resources. But despite that, we're doing really pioneering work, and especially the short-term rent assistance program. For too long, all we did is treat the problem downstream. With this tool, we're able to go upstream and prevent people from falling into homelessness. And once families fall into homelessness, there is a cascading effect, both in terms of the human cost and the public cost. And this is a really smart investment of public resources. I also want to use this forum to publicly thank Danielle Ledesma for all the work she's done on this and other things. And as some of you know, about a year and a half ago, I recruited Danielle from the Bureau. I did not know her very well, but she was clearly a star player, and I asked her to be my policy coordinator in my office. Well, turnabout's fair play, because the Bureau has now recruited her back to a management position, and she will be leading, among other things, our equity programs, our public outreach, and she will be taking on major responsibilities. I have mixed feelings about this. Because I've had the benefit of working closely with her and seeing her grow enormously in the role that she's played for me. But I will tell you that the pool that applied for this position was about as deep and as impressive as you could imagine. And she rose to the top. And so we're very proud of the work she's done. I want to publicly thank Danielle. And I'm grieving now, but I want to thank her. And to all of you who continue in the trenches to make a difference in the lives of people who need our help. You know, many thanks. Aye.
Adams.
Well, former commissioners Gretchen Cafori and Eric Sten set up, I think, the high mark on the national bar for local officials dedicated and focused on housing access, affordable housing. Commissioner Fish, I think you have blown by that mark easily. Today is just another example of that. And the way and what is substantively different that I especially appreciate is this focus on not only helping people in need wherever you find them and being assertive in finding them, because they don't often come to us, but also skilling them up or providing them with the linkages to be able to have permanence and security in a more permanent way when it comes to housing. And that's so critically important, as you've noted, as all your panelists noted, that's critically important to be able to address other issues in their lives and not just the the issues that the vulnerable issues, but also to see their potential as individuals. And that's very exciting. So thank you for your great work. Thank you to your team. Thanks to our community partners, Danella. Really appreciate your work as well. Aye. So approved. We have one. Yes.
Thank you, Mayor. Before we adjourn, Council, I have three scheduling items. These have all been approved by our schedulers and also by the Council Clerk. So I move that we hold an evening hearing instead of the afternoon hearing on Wednesday, August 31st, partly for the purpose of hearing the Equity Office ordinance. We'll all be there on that date.
Is that a Wednesday or a Thursday?
It's a Wednesday.
Second?